From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
In an issue of his Pest Talks e-newsletter not long ago, today's guest wrote something that I really loved. "I often consider ignorance the most serious pest of plants," said J.C. Chong, an entomologist from Clemson University. More in a minute on how he advises us to become smarter observers ahead of when trouble is brewing in our gardens. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
J.C. Chong has worked at Clemson since 2007 and is an assistant professor running its Turf and Ornamentals Entomology Research and Extension Program. He also writes the Pest Talks newsletter that's part of the suite of magazines and e-newsletters from Ball Publishing geared to horticulture industry professionals. And that's where I first got to know his voice, but today we get to talk in real life. So welcome, J.C. Thanks for making time.
Hey, Margaret, how are you today?
Okay, so first I thought maybe just a little background. You know, as a longtime garden writer, I've read trade publications for a long time, and as I said in the intro, that's how I got to learn about you. But talk a little bit about what you do at Clemson, and then including the role you play in doing the Pest Talks newsletter.
Sure. I'm a professor at Clemson University with a research and extension appointment in turf and ornamental entomology.
Yeah.
So basically what I do is dealing with basically developing pest management program for growers of turf grass and ornamental plants.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in the garden, it could be in the sod farm, greenhouse, nursery, golf courses,
right.
Just about anything.
Right. And how long have you been doing the e-newsletter for Ball then?
Well, we are going into a second year,
So
that's pretty exciting.
It's very funny. Now, you wouldn't think that something that's about the latest horrible creature or disease to be to be known, or some new protocol, spray protocol, or something like that, could be funny. But you managed to have fun with it too, and keep it entertaining. So, congratulations on that.
What? Thank you. Well, it's always my philosophy in some way to, well, try, if people have to listen to me, might as well make it funny.
Exactly. You
know? Exactly. So that people can pay attention in some way, I suppose.
Yeah. So as I said in the introduction, I love the advice, and it was a couple of months ago maybe in one edition of the newsletter, you said, "I often consider ignorance the most serious pest of plants." And I just thought, I think it was maybe in reaction to something someone else had written about volcano mulching, and maybe we should tell people what that is. But tell me a little about that.
So that particular quote actually come from an issue I wrote about volcano mulching. I don't know. I'm sure you're familiar with volcano mulching.
Yes.
That's basically the practice of folks piling up that mulch right up to the trunk of the tree, making it really thick, almost look like a volcano. That's what we call it, volcano mulching.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of time, the reason why I say that ignorance is, you know, the biggest pest in some way, is that even though volcano mulching looks very nice, but it would actually lead to a lot of issues down the road. And one of the biggest issues is actually that it kind of increases the humidity level right at the trunk and cause a lot of trunk decay and that kind of issues. And basically, we're doing things that seems to make sense at one point, but is not exactly beneficial to the plant at all.
Right, and sometimes it's really driven strictly by, and I'll use this, it's probably a derogatory term, but the sort of mow and blow mentality of, quote, yard maintenance, which is, you know, that just make it look tidy so the homeowner feels they've gotten some service that Tuesday at 10 in the morning or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's just
put on
the mulch, clean up the edge. Yeah.
A lot of it is that, but also, you know, I think it kind of goes both ways. I think a lot of our homeowners also could use a lot of education as far as what a lawn's supposed to look like.
Yeah, totally agree. So we don't want to pile mulch up the neck of the trunk, the base of the trunk of a tree, so that we're creating these moist conditions and so forth. And so that was one example that you were, you then, you know, said the ignorant, you know, brought up the ignorance quote. And another sort of wisdom I have gleaned from your newsletter, you know, I loved that you acknowledged that even you sometimes need help with insect ID. You know, that it isn't not every potential pest or insect we see appear is known to all of us, even an expert like yourself, right? So how can we become less ignorant, and how can we avail ourselves more, especially us as home gardeners that are the audience that we're speaking to today? You know, like, what would you advise people do to sort of open up their minds to more learning?
Right. Well, there's not really a whole lot of trick to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a willingness of you to learn more about what your garden is about. You know, read up, go to the Extension website, buy several gardening books, just to see what may be out there. And most of the time in the garden, the pest species that we deal with are, you know, relatively few. But once in a while, there may be some something surprising coming up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to those kind of surprising cases, your local extension agent is definitely one of a good resource to help you identify any kind of pest problem that you have.
So, for instance, at Clemson, is there a lab that people submit samples to or call in, or, I mean, there's that type of services? Because in the old days, it used to be more widespread that people knew about their county extension, even, you know, having a hotline and things like that. And some of those have been eliminated in budget cuts and so forth.
Right. That's the unfortunate thing, is that, you know, what was available years ago, it may not be available now. But
right.
Most of the states still have a plant diagnostic clinic run by the university or the extension service.
Yes.
And those are the clinics that you can send in samples, and they'll be able to tell you what might be wrong with it.
Yes.
Either whether it's a disease or insects or abiotic factors or anything like that. Usually those clinics would diagnose the problem for you for a fee. Those fees are usually pretty minimal. For
yes.
example, at Clemson University, we have a clinic called the Plant Problem Clinic, or what is called Plant and Pest Diagnostic Lab.
Mm-hmm.
To run a sample, that's usually about $10 or $20, depending on what it is. So it's pretty minimal. And the best thing about it is that not only do you get a diagnosis, you're also getting pest management advice to deal with that particular problem yourself. And those advice are, you know, because they come from the extension service, they are research-based. They are coming from specialists that know something about those pests to give you the best advice available.
Plus, I would imagine there's a benefit in the other direction. If we as citizens use our extension, the extension knows when things are percolating out there in the area. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if there's an uptick in reports
absolutely.
Of some pest or disease occurrence, I would imagine
actually,
the extension. It's almost like citizen science, you know.
Yeah, sorry. You brought in a very good example, actually. What we have a recent case of that, because we have I'm not familiar, everybody's familiar with a crepe myrtle bark scale.
Yes.
It's a scale insect that attack crepe myrtle. And, you know, we recently found it in South Carolina. And that particular infestation was actually alerted by a homeowner to one of our extension agents.
Yes.
And so homeowner, a lot of time, if you know what you're typically dealing with, that's what I'm saying. If you know what you're typically dealing with, sometimes there's something surprising coming up. But when that come out, you know, you can always call on your extension agent to help you. And then, you know, in some way, you're actually helping them detecting some of the new pests that's popping up.
Yes. I grew up on Long Island, and early in my career, I was the garden editor at Newsday newspaper on Long Island. And we worked closely with our county extension agents in Suffolk and Nassau County, the plant pathologist. And, you know, I knew all these people in early in my career, and I think that's why my inclination is always to send a sample or always to inquire, not to guess. You know, if I have a conifer that has some other than normal looking needle browning. And like if I see interior needles browning in late summer, early fall in my area on most conifers, I know they're shedding, they're doing their shedding, and different species, you know, genera and species have different rates of shed and so forth, those inner needles will go away. But if I see something else and I don't know, I'm not just going to go, oh, well, maybe it's nothing. Do you know what I mean? Or make up a diagnosis.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. For example, one of the pest species that we see on conifers sometimes is a spruce gall midge.
Yes.
And that created something very similar to a lot of other diseases, basically is, you know, flaking of the terminal. And there's several diseases that could cause the same thing. So if you just go in thinking that, oh, well, it's one of those diseases, well, I can just spray a fungicide, then you're not solving your problem at all because fungicide doesn't kill insects.
Right.
And vice versa.
Right. Right. Exactly. So I want to, and I wanted you to encourage us as a person who works with a university extension, you know, to encourage us, because I think people can't believe it's okay to pester, you know, the university and send the sample, but I think it's a good idea.
Oh, no, we love it when folks caught up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes a special kind of people to be want to be in our position, and a lot of time we are the kind of folks that just want to help.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then there are also, in a more casual manner, there are online diagnostic tools, for example, not about, well, there are ones for diseases too, but for instance, if you see an insect, I mean, I love bugguide.net, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, I can upload a photo, and I don't want to pester them. They're all volunteers. I don't want to pester them and barrage them. I want to try to key it out myself if I can. I do my homework. But if I can't figure it out, well, I'll ask. And you know what I mean? Or inaturalist.org. People can at least try to avail themselves and then do a little homework once they have a rough ID, maybe. So that's, I'm surprised at how few people do that. They're too busy piling on volcano mulch.
Those are actually two very good resources. In fact, as a professional entomologist, even I would go to Bug Guide just to see what in the world I'm looking at sometimes.
Yeah.
Just to confirm that what I'm looking at, what I think it is indeed what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, for one example that just passed by late summer, early fall up north where I am, people will, they see, I don't know how you would describe them, but like cocoons, not cocoons, like webs. Well, it's fall webworm, but they think it's eastern tent caterpillar, which we don't have in the fall. We have it in the spring. Like, that's the wrong.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like the near miss people have in their mind. It's all one thing, and it's the wrong approach. Do you get both of those there?
Sure, we got both species in South Carolina for sure. In my neck of the wood, like you say. For webworm, eastern tent caterpillars, they just showed up at different time of the year.
Yeah.
So just by looking at time, you can usually figure out what it might be.
Yeah.
That's pretty true for a lot of insect species as well, which is if you match the time and also look at what kind of host plant they're feeding on, a lot of time you can make a pre-educated guess as far as what the problem might be.
Yeah. So those are two, the timing and the host plant are two other pieces of information to have when you go ask for that bug guide help.
That's
or
right.
Whatever. Yeah. Oh,
that's
good,
right.
Good point. In recent years, it seems like every 5 minutes there's sort of a much feared new sort of invasive species making the headlines. And I say new, you know, maybe in quotes, because a lot of times it turns out they've been around a long time, like they've been in the country since the 1940s, but they haven't become as serious an issue, like emerald ash borer or spotted lantern fly, whatever. So many of these. How is an entomologist and someone, I mean, is this what people ask you about all the time now, these headline ones? Or?
Oh, yeah. They ask me about the headline ones, and sometimes it's just a common everyday one, too. But usually the headline grabbing ones are what people are most interested in, of course.
Are there ones that have your particular attention, ones that you're the most concerned about, or kind of on your radar?
Well, a lot of times it kind of depends on what I'm working on, of course. For at least garden and ornamental plants in my area, we are really keeping an eye out for spotted lanternfly. What we could see up in your way in Pennsylvania area, they could cause serious issues in both production and also on just, you know, being a nuisance pest. A lot of times.
Tell
so
us
that's one thing that we're looking at. And we're pretty concerned about it simply because it could easily hitchhike on a lot of vehicle coming up and down the interstate. So when they get down here, it, you know, the environment's probably favorable for them to have a huge population as well.
Tell us a little bit background about the spotted lanternfly. It's not something I've talked about on the show before, and again, it seems to be, it's an eerily beautiful insect, so that's especially creepy. When you see pictures of it, do you know what I mean? It's
Yes. It's probably one of the most beautiful insects that I have known.
Yes.
It's a pretty, for spotted lanternfly is actually a kind of plant hoppers or tree hoppers, but you know, we have a lot of different species of spotted lanternfly, tree hoppers.
Yes.
But none of them are as beautiful as spotted lanternfly. They just have that gray color, gray background with a bright red and black dots and white spot, and that's just beautiful. And it was recently discovered in Pennsylvania and slowly spreading out to the surrounding state. And the biggest problem with them, of course, is them feeding on some of the horticultural crops that we might have, particularly grapevines.
Yes.
So folks are quite concerned about that, for sure.
So fruit growers in particular are very alarmed by this.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, folks out in California are also keeping an eye out for these spotted lanternfly as well, because once they get to California, who knows, they might become a huge pest on the wine grapes.
Yes. Yeah. Did it come from another country? I don't remember with that one.
Sure, it actually come from East Asia.
Most likely
China.
Another thing we read about in the headlines is the sort of the phrase biological controls being researched, often against pests like the ones we've been talking about or older pests. And your research focuses on, I think, integrative management of insects and mites that are damaging to turf grass and ornamental plants. Can you explain sort of what biological control and integrative, like what these terms mean, practically speaking?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
In fact, biological control is probably one of my specialties as well.
Yeah.
That's where I went to graduate school to study. So biological control, in its simplest sense, is basically using one insect or one organism to control another organism. So in this case, it could be one insect that's feeding on another insect. I'll give you an example. Tomato hornworm, sometimes you're going to have those white rice grain-looking cocoon.
Yes.
On their body, right? That's actually biological control in action.
Yes.
It's basically one organism controlling another one. Integrated pest management or integrative approach is an approach that take not just biological control, but a lot of other different control method into one comprehensive program. For example, if I want to control a pest, not only am I using insecticide, I'm also thinking about using cultural control or using biological control and combine all together in a comprehensive program.
And so by doing so, by using cultural control, you know, sanitation and other cultural tactics, as well as biological control potentially, and maybe some intervention with an appropriate substance, a chemical or whatever, you would theoretically be mapping the least toxic remedy, because you're not just going and hitting it with the big spray only. You're looking to map a plan that's a smart plan. Is that correct? Is that the goal?
Well, the goal of integrated pest management really is, the central goal really is to reduce our use of insecticide.
Yes.
Pesticide by its nature, is basically chemical warfare in some way. So some of them can be toxic to human, to pets, or the environment. So the whole idea of using different kind of approach is so that we are not so reliant on pesticide alone.
Yes.
So instead of every time we see a mosquito, we spray, spray, and spray, we think about another approach to try to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, hitting them with your hand would be a cultural control, I guess.
Yes.
And perhaps letting a spider eating the mosquito would be a biological control. So if you just try to think of different ways to actually control that one pest, now you're doing integrated pest management.
Mm. I wanted to, you know, up here at least, winter is planning to arrive at some point. Everyone I know always says, depending on what the pest that's been prevalent in a given year is, they say, you know, I hope we have a cold winter to freeze, you know, fill in the blank, you know, name of the worst pest of the season, or at least ticks in my area, also ticks to death, as if winter, a certain degree of winter chill is going to have a cleansing, you know. And I think you've alluded to that, to being asked that a lot, is it going to be cold enough this winter to kill off blank? Is that something that you're asked about? And what is the relationship between chill and you know, pest management?
Right. Well, I was asked that question every single year.
Yes.
Of course.
Me too.
In the South, we have plenty of mosquitoes, we have plenty of gnats, and in the spring, everybody would be like, well, hey, the winter is pretty cold. Do you think we're going to have just as many mosquitoes?
Yeah.
My answer has always been, I don't know, my friend.
Yes.
I just don't know.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time, insect population or disease population, it kind of depends on the temperature that they are facing at the time when they are developing. For the winter, a lot of time, for example, insects, a lot of insects actually have a life stage that would help them over the winter. So, you know, unless the temperature drop really, really, really low, otherwise we're probably not going to see a whole lot of differences in pest population the next spring.
So one of the pests that I'm the most afraid of at the moment is these Asian jumping worms, a couple of species of invasive mm-hmm. worms. And, you know, and they have a strategy like that. They're sort of, at least in our northern climates, they're annual. The adults hatch from, you know, from sort of like little egg cases or whatever that are left from the adults of the last summer or fall, and they grow up and they're just around for the summer and then they die. So all that has to survive the cold is the little egg case, and that is very durable to cold. So like you're saying, these different animals have strategies where, you know, like the mosquitoes and whatever, where they have a winter phase that keeps them safe. It may not be the adult that's out there flying in the freezing cold.
Right. It could be a lot of different life stages. And a lot of times, those kind of overwintering stages are usually eggs or pupae.
Yes.
And in those life stages, they are usually much more tolerant to environmental extreme.
Yes. Yes. And strategically so. It was a geniuses, all these genius moments of evolution in developing those strategies, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't have a big population the next year.
That's right.
Yeah,
they have. Well, insects have millions of years to try to figure out.
Yes.
What's the best way to make sure they propagate?
Yes. Well, in the last minute,
they've got plenty of practices.
Yeah. In the last minute, I just wanted to ask you: is there something right now that's really a focus? I mean, I know you say it changes depending on what project, but is there anything you've been really reading up on, delving into, worried about? The way I'm worried about the jumping worms—that's my main obsession.
Right. Yeah. Well, My main obsession has always been scale insects. Of course.
Scale.
That's why I've been studying, and that's really the number one pest that we have in most of our landscapes and gardens.
Uh-huh. Scale.
For the most part. Hmm. Right. Scale insects.
Okay. All right.
Well.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to speak to you finally, and I enjoy the newsletter, and as I said, I love that you managed to give all this information to the trade as well as some laughter to make it go down easier. and thank you for making the time. And thanks for telling us
to... thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thanks for telling us to send our samples to the extensions, because I think that's something, hearing it from you makes it sound a little more important. So thank you.
Oh, yes. That's definitely a good investment.
Good. I'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Thank you.
Sounds great.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @AwayToGarden, and happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.